Nacholand Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Friday episode of the Calcioland Podcast. So I have a bounce in my step today. I'm reunited with Alex Goldberg. Last week we had to record separate. We have two excellent interviews. Today we're going to focus a lot on the show on Insigne, who now has signed the contract with Toronto. So we'll get Alex's take at the top. I'll talk a little bit more. I know you guys heard me talk a lot about it recently, so we'll do that. At the end, we have two awesome guests to continue the Insigne special. We have Napoli Outsider on to talk about the legacy of Insigne with the club there. And I asked my dear friend Derek Favretto, who is based in Toronto, to come on the show to give us a perspective on what Insigne's transfer to Toronto means, how he'll be received. For those of you that are patrons on the show, we also have an awesome article coming on the differences in Toronto FC between when Jovinko played for them and Insigne now. So we're trying to cover it from all angles. On top of that, we'll also talk about the January transfer window. We have a special part of the pod to talk about that. Thousand Names did send me his game picks for this weekend. He wasn't sure because he was concerned the games would get rescheduled, but he did send me the picks, so we'll get those in as well. But I'm thrilled to be reunited with our dear friend Alex Goldberg. For those of you that don't know, I can't begin to tell you how awesome it was to see Alex on Sky Sport News. His podcast really blowing up, so huge congrats, Alex, on that. Really, really wonderful. But let's talk about Insigne, buddy. I haven't had a chance to talk to you on the show about this. And look, we've been doing this pod for a while. I know Insigne, when we first started, I think was one of your favorite Serie A players, if not your favorite. So I got to ask you this, like point blank, I'll leave it very general. What do you make of Insigne heading to MLS in Toronto? He's going to turn 31 next year, so it's not like he's totally over the hill by any means. So what do you make about this move?
Yeah, I like it, David. And I really think that I'm saying that. Like, I never truly know the 100% reason why I'm saying something. I think there's always going to be multiple reasons as to why I'm saying something. But I do think a huge portion of me is saying that irrespective to Giovinco's time in the MLS. But the reason why I am not completely sure is the parallels are even aesthetic, let's be real. Like, two short Italian players moving to the MLS, obviously a lesser league when perhaps they could show some chinks in their armor in Serie A, when they could become a lesser player in Serie A. They move to the MLS at a time where, okay, they're going to show a little less vulnerability. And in Insigne's case, I mean, obviously he has a better Serie A resume than Giovinco did. Not to poo-poo Giovinco. I even heard you last episode speaking about Giovinco, and there were definitely times in Serie A where Giovinco was a really nice player. But of course, we know what Lorenzo's done for Napoli, and we know how important he's been to them for a long time now. And I mean, he's still playing pretty well right now. Honestly, David, you and I both kind of admitted that we had thought Insigne a couple years ago had fallen off, that it was just about to be over for him, and he kind of bounced back pretty impressively. Then again, in hindsight, it doesn't surprise me all that much, because I think when you're that small of a player, you have to have a lot of grinta, don't you? You have to have a lot of personality, a lot of character, and he definitely does. So, yeah, I was really impressed that he could kind of make it seem like he was a top Serie A player still. And maybe that's harsh to say make it seem. Maybe he is to an extent. He's definitely not a European superstar in my eyes, and probably has always fallen short of that. But look, he still is an important player for a top, top Serie A team at the moment and for the Azzurri. But I do think this is the right time. I do. And now, instead of paralleling it to Giovinco, who I will speak on again probably in a moment, but I think I've learned something with Eden Hazard. And I'm not saying he and Insigne are exactly the same, but they're definitely both shorter players, like to operate on the left. I would say Insigne probably relies more on his ability to shoot than Eden, and Eden would probably rely more on just his playmaking, his dribbling ability, etc. But I do think we see that when a player like that, of that stature, gets around that 30-year mark, they have to reinvent themselves a little bit. They want to stay in Europe. Like Mertens, it's always different because Mertens is closer to the goal and Mertens just does a little bit something different. He doesn't have to, nor can he really rely on maybe his body way, way away from goal and dribbling past players. Mertens is always going to be one of those really unique small poachers and also guys who can just strike the left or the right anywhere in the box. But with Insigne, I do see the time where, all right, if he's going to keep operating in the same zones, he's just going to become a step too slow. And I think once you become even a half a step too slow with Insigne's stature, you could really fall off quite a bit. And now I see him go to the MLS. I haven't seen it yet, but now with his move to the MLS, where he joins in July, I mean, I just kind of feel like based on what I've seen from Giovinco, but even a player, David, like David Villa, who, of course, in Europe also loved his time on the left. I know he also played centrally too. And in fact, when David Villa was about to go to the MLS, he had come off a nice stint at Atletico Madrid. He was playing much more centrally. But still, I mean, you go to the MLS and the pitch, it's just different. Some of the pitches are absolutely bizarre, but there's just going to be a lot more space for Insigne, not necessarily space for him to have by himself, but I think there's going to be a lot more space for him to operate where he's within striking distance. And I think if you can put him in a situation where all he has to do is turn and he could do his famous curler, he's going to be in a really nice situation for himself. We know the athletes are not the same in the MLS, of course. So I think if the other players are a step slower, then that will be okay if he's lost a step. But, you know, the way it'll ultimately work is if he wants it to work. We know how much he wants to be a Napoli player every year. I mean, we've seen the tattoo on his calf, right? We know his love for Naples. We know how much he loves playing for that club. It's going to come down to, all right, does he have the same drive to be a great MLS player as Giovinco? Because, David, here's the one difference. Giovinco still kind of needed to prove something, if you know what I mean. Like, to whomever was watching him. So he came over to Toronto and it was like, wow, okay, this is where I'm going to prove it. And maybe I'll even prove to the fans back in Italy. And David, you talked about it so many times on this podcast. I mean, Giovinco is definitely a victim to a lot of abuse and everything in Italy. Like that could have also been a time for him where he's like, well, look what you're missing. You know, so maybe he still had to prove that he was a really good player to some. And Sini, I don't know if he has that same point to prove. So I heard you say this in the last episode, and I 1,000% agree. I think just because Insigne's had the better Serie A career than Giovinco doesn't mean Insigne is guaranteed to do what Giovinco did in the MLS. With that said, I definitely don't think Insigne will be bad in the league. I definitely don't. But I'm not necessarily sure he's going to be a historic player like Giovinco's been. But I do think he'll do well. And I like the move, right? Because once again, I think he's potentially moving at exactly the right time. So I won't spiel any bit more because now it's just up to kind of see what he has for us in the MLS. But I do think it kind of makes sense. So hopefully my answer made sense.
No, excellent. Really, really good, Alex. I enjoyed it. And that's why it was great to get your take too. Have one more follow-up for you. So now we're going to try to cover maybe aspects that haven't been covered as much on Twitter in general. So try to kind of take it from a different spin. So one thing that I think is underrated is the fact that Insigne is staying at Napoli to finish the season. So on Tuesday, we see him going to Rome. There was the video on Di Marzio's site signing the contract, heads back to Naples. Then they travel to Turin, draw Juve. By the way, that was a really, really important point for Napoli. We'll get to it in the game picks. So I got to ask you this, like, how weird is it to you, this idea that you have not just the player, but the captain of the team still there knowing that he's leaving? If that was going on at Chelsea, what would be your reaction? Or if you want, you can keep it more on Giovinco specifically, because I think that is one thing that hasn't been talked enough about.
It's a little peculiar to me, but honestly, if I'm a Napoli fan, I feel like I've been prepared for Insigne's departure for a while. So, like, I'm not sure if I would view it as that bizarre that the captain is choosing to leave, especially since it's to another league, if that makes any sense. I mean, listen, if he was captain of Napoli and he was choosing to go to Inter and he played a whole other half a season with Napoli before that happens, that's weird. And I always kind of think, I know De Vrij wasn't the captain, but you remember that situation where De Vrij was playing, what, for Lazio, but knew he was about to join Inter.
Yeah.
And then played a huge part in the finishing of the Champions League places. Like, that was bizarre. But, you know, I think the fact that MLS and Serie A, I don't have much crossover, it doesn't get me too much. But, I mean, I do see the fact that if I'm a Napoli fan and my captain's on his way out, he's playing for another half a season, and there's a lot to play for, sometimes I think I would question if that's the best way to go. But Insigne, David, seems like a guy who is just so in love with the club and the fans. So it doesn't bother me all that much. If it was somebody who had a history of focus issues and concentration issues and maybe commitment issues, maybe that would irk me a little bit more. I mean, I do kind of wonder what's the new regime of Napoli. I mean, I really like Osimhen and I like some other players, but in terms of where's the identity and who are the next leaders, that could worry me. But once again, it's definitely not something with Insigne specific where I'm like, well, this is a problem that he's leaving, but he's going to be captain for the second half of the season. I don't view that as much of a problem because, David, I mean, let me turn around a question at you. I have another question regarding Insigne, but also to kind of just slap on it. A, is Insigne one of the most attached players to a city and to a fan base that we've had in Serie A in recent time? And then also, what is your take on Insigne's move now that more time has passed, you know, just in general? But also, like what I just said, from the outside looking in, and maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I know we have a lot of Napoli listeners, and I know Napoli Outsider, of course, is just an incredible guest that comes on the show all the time. But from the outside looking in, Lorenzo Insigne looks like one of the more attached players to a city and to a fan base that I've seen. Am I wrong in saying that?
No, you're not. It's interesting, though, because, look, I think what sets it apart is the fact that he's born right outside Napoli. Like, he's from the region, and in the region they call him Scugnizzo, a young guy from the area there. And he's certainly that. He spent his whole time at the club. So, yeah, there's no doubt. You know, we talk a lot about Bandiera in Serie A, and that's kind of like a signature player. Think Totti for Roma, Del Piero at Juve. Look, you know, look, I've gotten a lot of criticism for how I've rated Insigne as a player, but I think it's fair to say he's not on the level quite of those players, both as a player and as a legend. But when you look at the league right now, yeah, he is certainly incredibly identifiable with the team. And I think everyone's going to really enjoy when I ask the Napoli Outsider how he compared Hamsik's departure from Napoli, which was very similar to Insigne's. And I think you guys are going to be really interested in what he has to say there. As far as the other things that are underrated, I touched upon a little bit on this on the Tuesday episode for our patrons. So this might be a little repeated for them. I think one thing you said, Alex, stood out to me. And this is a point I've tried to make on Twitter and got absolutely slaughtered for. And maybe I didn't express it the best way possible. But although Insigne clearly, and I can reiterate that, clearly was a better player than Giovinco when they arrived at Toronto, much longer track record. Italian national team Insigne, very important, better career record without a doubt. I don't think it's a given that Insigne is going to even match Giovinco. A, MLS is better than when Giovinco was there. And Giovinco came to MLS with a ton to prove. And Giovinco, you know, was considered the heir apparent of Del Piero at Juve. So it's not like he was like a chump in Serie A. He was highly rated. He struggled at Juve, but he was really excellent at Parma. I would compare Giovinco's best season at Parma, I think, is somewhat comparable. You can take Insigne's best season at Napoli. Now, obviously, track record-wise, Insigne was much better. But to me, it wasn't shocking that Giovinco ended up being one of the three best players in MLS history. And that's not just for name recognition, but how he played in the league. And if you told me, Dave, would you bet the house that Insigne is going to match that? I would probably bet more that he doesn't. Which doesn't mean I don't think Insigne is going to do very well. I don't think he's going to mail it in by any means. But Giovinco really came with a lot to prove. The other things that I think are important is I think the people that highlight the fact that Insigne now lost his place on the Italian national team, it's because probably they are from the perspective of saying, I don't understand, I don't get why Insigne is doing this, he's going to cause himself that. I did a little bit of research. I think if there was any manager other than Mancini, this would be a very valid point, because usually Italian managers focus on Serie A. But Mancini's an international manager, coached abroad in different places. And more importantly, when he was already with the national team, he selected Al-Sharawi. Well, Al-Sharawi was playing in China. So, A, I would say the Chinese league is not as good as MLS, but more importantly, Al-Sharawi is nowhere near as important to the Italian national team as Insigne is. I think one of our patrons pointed this out, too. If you watch the documentary on Italy at the Euro, you see what a huge part of the team he is. So I think him losing out on the Italian national team is wildly overblown. Like, he could, because of age, if Italy doesn't make the World Cup and they want to start a new cycle. But I don't think it really has much to do with MLS. And as far as the salary, look, a lot's been made about this. I have the utmost respect for Di Marzio, Fabrizio. Those guys are amazing reporters. I'm not disputing the information that they're getting, but I will say what was really significant was Giovinco saying that when he was going through the same thing Insigne did, they had presented him these figures and he thought he was going to get paid more. And then there was a ton of taxes and it wasn't near to what was reported. I think the fact that a lot of this stuff is being reported is to soften the pill for Insigne's departure, saying, well, you know, it was impossible for him to say no to this offer. Nobody in their right mind would turn down, because essentially the reported figures are that Toronto was offering him almost three times more than Napoli. So I think this is also kind of a way to soften the pill. But then I wonder, do people ultimately really care that much that he's leaving? That's why it's very interesting to hear a Napoli outsider's perspective. Again, I'm not disputing Gianluca and Fabrizio. I'm sure they are getting this information and they are reporting what's being told. But remember what Giovinco said. And interestingly, his agent is the one that was the intermediary on this deal for Insigne. And, you know, I think in MLS, all the salaries are public. There's a day where eventually they come out. So it'll be very interesting when that gets. But look, as someone who covers Serie A and is based in North America, I am thrilled that Insigne is coming. So, Alex, before we get the transfers, today I was going to almost do over-unders for second half of the season. I am going to save it for next week, but I do have one to tease it. And I'm going to ask you this. I picked Lautaro. And I'm going to ask you this, rest of the season, over under Lautaro, 7.5 goals with the wrinkle. Does that number go to 10.5 if his buddy Lukaku returns and they play together at San Siro?
Well, I don't think Lukaku is going anywhere. I don't. And my God, I was really blessed these last 24 hours that Lukaku hasn't been too big of a subject. It's been nice for sure. And I do think the drama is over for now. I think Tuchel handled
it. I agree.
Yeah. Tuchel handled it so
unbelievable.
Brilliant.
Unbelievable.
So yeah. It's so strange the way it was handled by Tuchel first and foremost. It made it feel like, all right, we don't have to have this conversation of could there be a surprise exit in January. We'll see what happens in the summer, but it's just going to come down to Lukaku how well he does in a Chelsea shirt. So to get to Lautaro, 7.5, you say, rest of the season, huh?
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to go over that, and I'm going to kind of challenge Lautaro here a little bit. Lautaro is a player that I still rate really highly. I do, in terms of the talent. But let me say this to Lautaro, because I know he's listening. Lautaro, sometimes David asks me for the Premier League perspective, we like to call it here on the podcast. And we usually these days when we're talking about, all right, Alex, what's the Premier League perspective on so-and-so? We usually are not talking about you anymore. We're talking about a Vlahovic or like even a Tammy Abraham. Maybe that's more just because he had moved from the Premier League. But we haven't really been talking about you too much, Lautaro, and you're really not spoken too much in the mouths of many Premier League fans who are looking for a new young forward or striker. And let me just tell you, Lautaro, a couple seasons ago, you were talked about near the top in terms of, oh, young strikers or young forwards that teams could get. I mean, near the top. And the only reason why you weren't talked about more is when Barcelona were still somewhat of a functioning club, we all thought you were nailed on to play with Messi at Barcelona. So I'm going to challenge you, Lautaro. Get over 7.5. Get 8 goals, at least, between now and the end of the season, because I think you're plenty good enough. And obviously, you're on a good team. I'm not saying you're a bad player on a bad team. Nope, 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 nope. But I'm just saying, based on some of the aspirations I and many had for you a couple years ago, I'm not sure if you are fulfilling them. So, yeah, let's go over, because I know you have it in you.
I love it, Alex. And I was just teasing you, and this was an opportunity to wrap up the Lukaku thing. And yeah,
that Lukaku quote, though.
Toko was brilliant. And look, yeah, that I have to say, there were so many crazy things Lukaku said. But if I was a Chelsea fan, that part on Lautaro, no, 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 you stay there. I'll come rejoin you. That was really something else. But we digress now. Let's get the transfer topics. There's a lot to get to. And I look forward to next week doing the goal over under. So what are we going to go over for transfers today, Alex?
I mean, it's almost like you had made that comparison of if you're dating a girl and then you're nonstop talking about your ex and how much you want to be back with them. It's almost like, okay, you know, you're married to someone and someone says, hey, do you want to invite your ex for a threesome? And you're like, no, 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 no. You just stay back there. I'm going to divorce this girl very soon. Like, Lukaku doesn't even want Lautaro part of the threesome. So, yeah, that's how much he apparently dislikes Chelsea. All right. Anyway, I digress. Let's move on to transfer topics. Speaking of strikers, David, and speaking of a guy that a couple of years ago we definitely spoke about, well, some of us did in a glowing way. What did you make of Fiorentina bring Piontek to the club?
Wow. I love it that you remember the right pronunciation because we haven't talked about him for a while. Yeah. And he does dominate the January window. If you remember a few years ago, that big transfer from Genoa to Milan, which our friend None Voluto had broke. Yeah, so it's interesting. So Piontek's returning to Serie A. Actually, before we recorded, Fiorentina had the tweet that he was there. Look, to me, the fascinating question is this. Is Piontek coming to replace Koronen, be a backup striker, and be Vlahovic backup striker? If that's what it is, fantastic. I think you could do a lot worse than that. Is he coming to be Vlahovic eventual's replacement? If that's what it is, maybe not so great. Is it somewhere in between where it's like, you know what? We're bringing him in on loan with option to buy. The option to buy isn't sky high. Let's see what he is. Maybe he gets back on fire and maybe playing for Italiano and that system is really great for him. So I've been very complimentary of Fiorentina. I really like this move for them. There was buzz that Piontek was going to go back to Genoa, and man, they do need some help, but it sounds like Genoa might be getting Miranchuk from Atalanta. So Genoa will continue to be active, but kudos to Fiorentina. I'm going to go with the fact it's a low risk, high reward, seeing if he can potentially help replace Vlahovic down the line. And Vlahovic, like Lukaku, will certainly finish the season at their current club.
Mm. All right, David, what are Milan's priorities in the January window?
Well, definitely center back. So yesterday they beat Roma. And, you know, I got to say I was surprised. Roma didn't challenge their center backs because they were playing their fourth and fifth center backs. And Kalulu and Gabbia. So they absolutely need a center back. Interestingly, Maldini was asked about Botman and the January transfer window in January. And what he said, look, we can't spend a lot. This isn't Berlusconi's Milan. To me, that sounded like, you know what, if Bobman's going for a big fee, we won't be getting him. We know Newcastle are interested. And the difference between Ikone, who came from the same club and went to Fiorentina, is Fiorentina paid cash money. There wasn't a loan with option to buy. They bought him outright. And it doesn't sound like Milan would be able to do that with Bobman. So unless Bobman says, you know what, I'm only going to Milan, work it out. Do they maybe work it out? It's possible. But I'm going to say also based on the way Maldini answered the question yesterday, it'll probably have to be someone else. So I definitely think center back is the priority. I think Macias is playing really pretty well. Brian Diaz had his first good game. So maybe then they try to sign like a backup striker or a younger one that can be a backup for Giroud and Ibra.
Hmm. Okay. All right, David, are Inter going to make moves in January?
Yeah, so Inter very active on the Bosman front. So A, their priority is re-signing Brozovic, which Inzaghi basically hinted is basically almost done. They did sign their goalkeeper of the future, Onana. Arrived, took the medical in Italy. He'll sign a 5-year deal. He's going to make $3 million net. I think that's a good salary for a starting caliber keeper. Not too much. I think next season it'll kind of be him and Handanovic, similar to Buffon and Szczesny, first year Szczesny arrived. And the other Bosman player they are looking to sign is Ginter, the defender from Borussia Mönchengladbach, who's also a target for other teams, even some in the PL. But we know Inter with these Bosman deals are really good. Ginter has the same agent as Çalhanoğlu, who they signed. And I think if they sign Ginter, it opens up the door to Inter potentially selling De Vrij, but in the summer, which I think he'd make a lot of sense for Conte at Spurs. I don't know if Inter is going to really make any moves to bolster the team this season. Keep in mind the option to buy Correa vests the minute they get a point in the second half of the season, which might already be Sunday. So that's already a good chunk. A change, but Inter is in a such strong position also because they've avoided injuries that I think this January they are looking more to the future.
All right, David. And last one for this segment. What do you make about all these dry loans in Serie A recently?
Yeah, so this is a trend that had started last year. If you remember, we had Napoli who got Bakayoko on a dry loan. Milan got Dalot on a dry loan. I think there were some other ones. So I think we're seeing this more and more. And we're seeing now Tuanzebe joining Napoli and Minlines joining Roma, both on dry loans. And I think this also has to do with the uncertainty with COVID. I think teams don't want to commit to salaries and transfer fees even for next season. And I think from the selling team perspective, there is also like, oh, look what happened with Tomori last year. If we set the option to buy now at a price and then the guy is awesome, maybe that option to buy could have been a little bit more. So I think more than anything, it's that uncertainty with COVID and also the loaning team who's loaning out a player wants to protect themselves a little bit more. So I think we're going to see more and more of these, especially, I would say, Premier League players coming to Serie A on loan.
Okay. All right. Well, that was the transfer topic segment, David, which is always a lot of fun. And speaking of fun, bringing 1,000 names into the show is fun and terrifying all at the same time for you, especially when you maybe don't read over his predictions. But no matter what, David, let's get into it. Who are you in 1,000 picking?
Yeah, excellent. So he sent me these last second because, again, he wasn't sure if these games would take place. So as always, we appreciate his contributions. All the games are on Sunday, by the way, this week that they played yesterday. First up, big match, the last one on schedule. Inter hosting Lazio. 1,000 names as Inter winning 1-0, goal by Vidal. Man, we're destroying Lautaro today. 1,000 has him missing a penalty. I still ride for him. I'm a big fan. He says Simone Inzaghi is going to light a cigar in Sarri's face. He says there's going to be spectacular football at San Siro and that we should trust 1,000 on this. In Italian, pronostico Inter-Lazio 1-0, Vidal. Lautaro sbaglia rigore, Limone accende il sigaro in faccia Sarri, calcio spettacolo San Siro. I agree Inter's going to win, but I'm going to say they win by a bigger margin than this. Man, Lazio's defense is just terrible. They almost given up 2 goals a game on average. Look, they were a bad defense before Sarri came on board, but Simone Inzaghi was able to hide it a little bit. Acerbi's not been good this season, and he was their only good defender. So I'm actually going to go. I think Inter's going to pile on here. I'm very down on Sarri. You guys know I love him, but I think Inter wins 3-1. I'm going to give Lautaro a goal. I'm going to give Çalhanoğlu a goal, and I'll give Dzeko a goal. He's back, and I'll give Immobile one as well.
Sorry, sexuals in the mud, as the kids would say.
Next up, Roma-Juve. Man, Allegri versus Mourinho. 1,000 as Roma winning 1-0. goal by Tammy Abram, but I was very happy to see him score yesterday. He's had a lot of bad luck. He deserved a nice break there. 1,000 has Roma winning 1-0, goal by Tammy Abraham. He says Cuadrado's going to miss a penalty, that Szczesny is going to have a disastrous game. And he says in the derby between dinosaurs, Mourinho always wins, but that he says Chiesa's going to humiliate Zaniolo. Man, that Roma game yesterday was rough. Kudos to Milan, but Roma did look rough. Juve, that point, Napoli getting a draw was huge because now Napoli has the tiebreaker. I can't believe Allegri said that Napoli had all their starters yesterday. It couldn't be further from the truth. That was really a bad game for Juve. I know they pulled off a draw. They were lucky too, but Roma's kind of in disarray. I'm going to go 0-0 this game, although Roma, really bad defense as well, but I'll go 0-0 here. And last one, Milan traveling to Venezia. This is one of the early games. 1,000 has Ibra scoring 2 goals. Theo Hernandez scoring. Milan winning 3-0. He says Pioli is going to move forward with help on penalties. He says Zanetti, the manager at Venezia, is going to smell Colantuono's breath. I think he means in the standings, not as a sacking, because Colantuono with Salernitana. And he says Brahim Diaz is the worst player on the pitch. Milan struggled to beat Venezia the first time around with some of their bench players. Venezia have been pretty solid. I'm going to go draw. Milan did beat Roma. That was really important. I'll go 1-1. I'll give Ibrahimovic a goal, and I'll give Buzio a goal, who's been excellent. So before we get to our great guest to talk more about Insigne, you'll hear first Napoli outsider, then my friend Derek. We'll get to our patrons. As always, thank you so much for your support. If you enjoy Calcioland, you get an episode on Tuesday. You get a monthly special with Napoli Outsider. In some tiers, you get some excellent articles. You join a great community, and you get to ask us questions every pod. So thank you so much to our patrons.
Well, we couldn't do an Insigne episode without our dear friend, the Napoli Outsiders. For those of you that have been following the pod for a while, he is a fantastic guest. I always say I think there's no better Calcio guest in English on any pod. He is part of our monthly patron special where we always have great chats. But today, I really appreciate him coming on because we want to talk a little bit about Insigne, but more from Napoli's perspective, his legacy, and how he will be remembered. So, my dear friend, there's so much going on with Serie A, games being postponed. Who knows what's going to happen? So, let's just talk a little bit about Insigne's time at Napoli. And thank you so much for hopping on, my friend.
Hi, David. Thank you for being here, for allowing me to be here, rather.
So let's start here very simply. You've had a front row seat in Insigne's career, a homegrown player who's played at Napoli his whole career. So very simply, how do you think he'll be remembered?
Well, it's an interesting question because he's going to leave behind a bit of a mixed bag in the sense that he's been always a very polarizing figure. I mean, there's no question that he's been one of the most influential players of this of these last 10 years. There's absolutely no question about that. That being said, you know, he was always under the spotlight, I would want to say. The thing is, sometimes I've seen unfair criticism going his way. Some other times I've seen almost too much praise because he was a polarizing figure. That's what happens, you know. It's always to the extremes. But in truth, he's been one of the best players that Napoli have had since coming back to Serie A, without question. He's been one of the central figures in team building and whatever's happened. You know, he was always at the center of everybody's thoughts. Even the fact that he was from Naples contributed to it. In fact, the biggest things the nicest things that some fans would say about other guys like Hamsik or Koulibaly or Mertens was that it looked like they were born in Naples. Well, for Insigne, that was actually the truth. So even though he was born in the suburbs, but, I mean, you get it. And so I think, you know, not everybody's going to remember him fondly because he was, you know, he was always in the thick of things, which also meant being in the thick of the poor things. And depending on which ones leave you a bigger impression, that's how you're going to remember him. But over time, I think when the dust has settled, everybody will remember him as one of the most important figures of the 21st century in Naples, without question. Now, the thing is, you know, especially the way he is leaving, he's kind of leaving a bitter taste in people's mouth, to be honest. That's what I've noticed. But right now, you can't really follow the trail of what the fans are saying, because everybody's talking, you know, with a, how can I say, in impulsive terms, because it's going now right now, and not a lot of people thought it would be possible. In fact, you know, we spoke about this several times over the last few months, and neither one of us thought it would be possible that he wouldn't end up in Toronto. I mean, we thought that he was going to stay in Naples, because I was looking at around in Europe, and I thought nobody's going to offer him a better package of things. And in fact, that's what did happen. Now, what I did not consider was that he, at the age of 30, he would want to go overseas. Now, I'm not one of those that considers Major League Soccer some kind of a Serie B type of soccer. But it is indeed a different type of environment as opposed to Europe. And once you step over there, obviously the spotlight kind of wanes, kind of goes away. And the perception is in Europe is that the U.S. and Canada, in terms of you know, status, they are not exactly on par with Italy, Spain, England, or Germany or France. And I think that's actually a fair assessment. So, not a lot of people thought this would be possible, but in the end, he made a professional decision. He decided that money didn't matter for him. And I thought, you know, the offer that Napoli made was not even too low. It was, in fact, it was not beaten by any other European team, which says a lot.
Yeah.
But he felt that it was too low for his tastes. And, you know, the thing is that basically what Napoli did was they lowered the base salary and increased the bonuses. Now, if he had hit all the bonuses, he actually would have had a marginal increase to his old salary. But obviously Toronto came in with a better offer, and he decided to take it. And I think that has to be respected, although there are some things that, again, they are kind of irking the fans right now. For example, the fact that he was seen in Rome, so away from Naples, partying with champagne while he was signing the contract less than 48 hours before the game against Juventus. So the thing is, you know, it's fair that you can go, but you're still the captain of the side. You're still there for 6 months. You're still getting paid by Napoli. You're still working and playing for Naples fans. You know, professionalism would require probably, I would say, a better image to be given to the fans. And a lot of people did not appreciate that. On the other hand, there's also another, let's say, about 30% of fans that are actually happy because they really hate the ownership group of Napoli, the De Laurentiis family. So anything that goes against them, anything that happens against them, is considered a net positive by these people. And they're actually happy because it means that Insigne is turning his back on the owner. But I don't think that anybody is looking at it in absolute terms, which means just looking at a professional decision. Insigne is making a professional decision. De Laurentiis, by offering that contract, made a professional decision, which is in line with European standards currently. And what happened is just, you know, a normal divorce when the contract runs out. The only surprise, again, for me was that the offer came from Toronto, which is interesting from Insigne's point of view, perspective. I mean, I hope he's happy over there, and I think he will be, to be honest. I think he will do well, and I think he will be happy. And I also think that it might have contributed the fact that he's going away. It's not a situation like, for example, Sarri, Higuain, other guys that left and then went, for example, to Juventus. In his case, he's just going so far away that he's almost guaranteed that he'll never face Napoli as an opponent. So I think that also played a bit into it. And then aside from that, though, you gotta wonder why he made this kind of decision, in the sense that I think it goes a little beyond money, because we remember that when Jovinko, for example, was in MLS, he was playing his heart out. He was playing great, but he still lost the national team. And there's a World Cup to be played. We hope that Italy qualifies for it in November. And I wonder if that's going to be part of it. And even if it is, then that's probably going to be his last dance with the national team, just because it's how things work in Europe. You end up at the MLS, and you kind of get forgotten by national teams in Europe. I don't know if that's fair, but it's the reality. It's just what happens.
Couple of thoughts on what you were saying. So first off, I think the national team, if there was any manager other than Mancini, I think it would be a very good point that going abroad impacts him. Like, look, he selected El-Sharawi when El-Sharawi was in China. I think Insigne has been much better player for the Azzurri, and I would say MLS definitely better than China. But the other thing that I think you mentioned, which I think is really important, I don't blame Napoli at all for their offer. I mean, they were looking to cut his salary a little bit. I think they were like, listen, we're going to pay you for what you think you can do for us in the future, not so much what you've done in the past. Then they really didn't offer much less than before. And what you said, what's really interesting is it was the best offer that he received in Europe. Do you think there was a scenario where he would have gone, say Inter had made him a really good offer, obviously not nowhere close to Toronto's, but better than Napoli's? Do you think he would have accepted?
I don't think so. I mean, that's why we've been discussing over the last few months. I thought that he would not go to any other team because we always discuss the package. I always thought that some team might come in with a better economic offer, but that economic offer would carry some baggage. And the baggage could be, for example, he would be a rotation player instead of a starter. Or he would have, a lot of bad blood, because I mean, if he joined Inter or Juventus or Milan, I mean, there would have been bad blood with Napoli fans. And is that worth it over, let's say, 500? Probably not. And nobody would offer him, let's say, 7 or 8 million to play as a starter in a better team than Napoli. So that's why I always thought he wasn't going to leave. Looking at it now, retrospectively, obviously Toronto, obviously the Middle East would have been two options. I just didn't think he would want to leave Europe. But, those became options, especially in terms of economic terms. And again, I have to respect this decision. I'm not sure I appreciate the way it's going down because there are some things that are troubling me too a bit. For example, the fact that his agent is trying to play it as we've been pushed away. But that card doesn't really work because there are so many free agents going on right now for 2022. There's like a multitude. And they're all being quiet. They're all being respectful. Even a guy like Mbappe, who has actually spoken about his desire to join Real Madrid for months, still has not agreed to terms with Real Madrid. And he's still giving a chance to Paris Saint-Germain to tie the offer. Insigne not only made a lot of noise with Instagram and through his agent over the last few weeks, he's actually the first to agree to another contract. So playing the card of being pushed out doesn't really work. If he is really being pushed out, then I mean, if he had waited until May or June or something like that, then sure he could have played that card. But he's literally agreeing to terms 2 days after, within 48 hours of being allowed to agree to terms with another club. So, you know, he could have avoided these things. And I think especially his agent could have avoided it. But aside from this, the substance of it is that we just have to respect what he's decided to do. And that's fine. And I think we have to respect what Napoli has decided to do as well. I think it's just one of those things that pisses off everybody in terms of fans, because some fans are going to be pissed at Insigne and some are going to be pissed off at the club, which is just exactly what's happening. I think it's more of a 70-30 split in this case, but it's a normal business transaction. Don't have to forget that this is a job for these people, even though they're fans. And I think that, you know, once Insigne retires, he'll be back to being a fan of Napoli for sure. I don't have any doubt about that, but we don't have to forget that it is a job. And as you know, because you've known me for a few years, what angers me, I mean, angers is a big word. What troubles me is when players lie to their fans, when they say one thing and then they do another thing. But when they don't, you know, in this case, I think he's just making a decision. He never promised he would sign a new contract. So the fact that he's going somewhere else, it's his prerogative. I respect it. I'm going to be a fan of his. I hope he does well in Canada. And I hope that fans don't really hate him for it, even though he could have managed the last week much better than he has. But, you know, it's stuff that happens. And I think it's not easy on him either, because as you said, he was born there. He all his career went on essentially in Naples, except for 2 years, one on loan in Foggia in Serie C and one on loan in Pescara in Serie B, and that's it. Otherwise, his whole professional career was in Naples or in the suburbs. So it's going to be a big change, not only from a football point of view, it's actually a huge change for his family. So I think, you know, he might have mismanaged last week or two or three, but I can't hold it against him because it's such a big life change that I think mistakes come along with it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I never fault in general anyone for taking the biggest offer. That's their prerogative, and I'm with you there. So let's just close on this, and as always, great job. Simple yes or no answer. Do you think Insigne will be missed more than the previous captain that left, Hamsik? And then if you had to pick one or two signature moments for Insigne at Napoli, which ones would they be?
I don't think he will be missed more than Hamsik. No, for two reasons. One, Hamsik, people almost only remember positive things about him. And I would say that Napoli's toughest moments actually started after Hamsik left. And in fact, they coincided with Insigne's captainship, which is something a bit troubling. I mean, we've had the mutiny, we've had other bad results, we've had bad blood going on in the last few years since Insigne became the captain. I don't think he's entirely to blame about it, by the way, but the fact that the two things coincided does play into fans' judgment. So he's not going to be missed as much as Hamsik. He is going to be missed, and he's going to be tough to replace, although the fact that he's playing a really, really poor season this year is actually going to help the perception of that. And regarding his signature moments, you know, there have been a few. I want to just mention two, though. And they're both on free kicks, even though probably his signature play was the ball to Callejon. That's the signature play. But the signature moments, I'm going to throw two in there. And they're both on free kicks, even though he only scored four with Napoli, I believe. But two of those were so memorable. The first one was with the Borussia Dortmund in the Champions League. And he scored a sensational free kick with the Borussia Dortmund keeper just hitting the goalpost. And leaving his teeth over there, actually. And that goal made a lot of fans think that Insigne was going to be special. Now, if he reached the heights that people expected, I don't know. But he certainly knocked on the door of European football right there. And the second one was the first game after Maradona had died. It was at home against Roma, and there was a free kick, and he scored a Maradona type of free kick and to open the scoring, and it was a beautiful moment, and I think it was incredible. I mean, he had other moments, like when scoring at the Bernabeu, a beautiful goal from 40 yards out, but those two are the ones that resonate and that stick more with me, in my opinion, in his career.
Listen, I can't thank you enough for doing this. We do our monthly chat, which I'm looking forward to later in the month. But thank you so much for coming on. As always, great job giving us a really informed and interesting and nuanced perspective, I would add, on Insigne. So, my dear friend, great way to start the year with you. And I look forward to doing more shows. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you, Dave.
All right, and I'm excited to close our special on Insigne heading to Toronto and coming here to MLS in North America with my dear friend Derek Favretto. And it's actually a really good anniversary that we're recording this. We're recording this on January 6th. January 7th was the day of my last surgery. It was a big journey for me last year, and Derek and I became great friends during that period. So I'm very excited to have him on right at the anniversary of this. So the reason I have Derek on is, A, he's a great guy. He's a big Milan fan, knows a lot about Serie A, a big fan of the Broncos, but he is based in Toronto. And what I wanted, the reason I wanted to have him on was to get his perspective on what Insigne to Toronto means and give kind of an idea to everyone listening that doesn't know much about what Toronto is like and why this could be a really nice move with Insigne. So, Derek, it's a real pleasure to have you on the show. Benvenuto to Calcioland.
Grazie, David. Thanks for having me on. Insigne coming to Toronto is going to feel seamless for him. Like we were talking about earlier, there's over 500,000 Italians in this area, and they're clustered all over different sects of Toronto, but he won't have any problems, with his family finding good housing in Italian neighborhoods, finding food that he would have would be similar to having back in Italy. In different areas you go in Toronto, you find different cultural groups from Italy. Like you could have find Calabrese food or food from Friuli or food from Napoli or things of this nature. And for me, it's a wonderful experience because my family's from Treviso, so we're always eating bacalà and polenta. But you can go to a different area and find some really wonderful stuff. So I think him coming here, other than going to the United States, this would probably be one of the biggest Italian communities on the planet.
Yeah, look, I don't think there's a lot of MLS clubs that he would have gone to, and what you said is really so important. And on top of that, Toronto, as you described, there's so many little neighborhoods, so many things. It's really an amazing city. I've only been up there once. It's you really feel like you have that New York availability of so many different things, and having that big of an Italian population is huge. So tell me a little bit, Derek, you're a huge sports fan. I know you've been to many Toronto FC games when Jovinko was there. So just tell me, give our listeners a perspective, because there's a big reason why Toronto is making this investment in Insigne. Obviously, having this huge Italian population has a lot to do with it. But how different has it been following Toronto and FC since Jovinko left?
It's been tough. It's been it's been hard. It's been difficult when you have somebody of such a high caliber coming from the Serie A and the Azzurri, and you see them, develop and blend into the city, blend into the team. They become a cultural, almost a cultural landmark, because people were coming to see him. And once he left, it was tough. We struggled on and off the pitch. The team finances were still good because people still went to the games. But last year, we weren't allowed to go to many games, but they only won six of them, and coupled with the 18 losses. So it's been tough. The quality of Calcio has been poor. And for a city that demands excellence, fans expect more, and the city expects more, because there is a diehard sect of this city that absolutely loves and respects soccer very much. And on a weekly basis, we're there. There's little sections of the stadium where there's the Portuguese, and there's Italians, and there's Germans. It's an amazing experience. Obviously, the quality of the culture is probably Serie B, but nonetheless, it's a wonderful experience. It's a beautiful stadium. It holds 30,000 people, but they can set up portable end zone seats to fit another 10 to 12,000 people. It really is a great experience.
Give us a sense on the excitement now that there is with Insigne, because that's one thing that, you've been sending me pictures of the ticket requests. We hear how much buzz there is about it. So how excited is the city with Insigne's arrival? And do you think there's just going to be a lot more demand to try to go to the games, I would imagine?
It's going to be tough. People are excited. The product's been, like I said, semi par for the last couple of years. And I think from the people that I've spoken to, and just, testing the waters on social media and on one of their big fan forums, people are really pumped. They know who he is. Lorenzo Insigne was on the main stage at the Euros, and if you didn't watch it, you missed. People are just dying, like I said, for a Calcio champion again. We got to experience that in 2017 with Sebastian, and hopefully hopefully with the addition of Lorenzo, he will also bring other, maybe some other players from either Serie A or B to complete this roster, because by no means is he the be all and end all to this roster. It needs to be like turned over big time.
Awesome. Do you think once he arrives in July, it's going to become one of the biggest stories there? Do you see him being embraced maybe even more than the way Jovinko was?
Oh, absolutely. I think that he will be, he's going to be beloved. I remember when Sebastian was here going to games, and yeah, there was a lot of people wearing, wearing MLS, TFC, kits. But his t-shirts, the Atomic Ant t-shirt, so you saw it everywhere. And people were there chanting and singing to him. It was insane. Like, you thought that guy was a god. No wonder why he wants to come back. I mean, he was beloved. He was like a mini version of Ronaldo in Juventus. You know what I mean? Like, it just, people gravitated to him. He was like the thing in Toronto for a really short period of time. But nonetheless, he rocked it. Now with Lorenzo, I feel like it's going to be the same. We're gonna see a city that's going to fall in love with a very creative and talented soccer player who's going to show you on the pitch why he obviously still deserves to play for the national team and probably should be still playing in Italy. But I digress. I'm happy he's coming. I know that this city will embrace him like no other. And he will, hopefully he gets some privacy, but I don't know. There's a lot of these folks are chasing athletes and stars. So hopefully he gets a bit of privacy for himself and the family, but I very much look forward to, as other cultural fans in Toronto, to seeing his arrival, because I think this will be a turning point. Also, with his addition, you'd have to think that Toronto is going all in and they're going to turn the roster over, and maybe we'll see some other international people coming in and seeing players like Altidore and Bradley on their way out.
Awesome, so, Derek. I can't thank you enough for doing it. Thanks so much for giving us a perspective on Toronto. I look forward to keep chatting with you in our chat with Bernhard and having you back on next time to talk about Milan, my friend. So thanks so much for everything, this interview, and for being such a great friend.
Thank you, David, and have a good night. Ciao.